You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Up next, we have Professor Jane Kelsey from the University of Auckland, who I talked to earlier today about the equity impacts of the recently announced UK-NZ free trade agreement. Professor Kelsey is a really well-known commentator on the impacts of globalization on neoliberalism, and this includes previous criticism of a government's approach to digital spaces and large trade deals, such as the former Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement.
Could you please just briefly explain what the free trade agreement between New Zealand and the UK actually is?
One of the important things when we look at trade agreements like this one is that in the 30-odd chapters, only a small number of them are really what you would call about trade, old-fashioned trade of exports going across the border. Increasingly, these agreements also include restrictions on how governments can regulate various things, such as the digital domain or foreign investment or government procurement, how government buys services and goods or intellectual property rights.
And so what would you say distinguishes, in your words, traditional exports-imports and the clauses that are typically, again in your words, included in these free trade agreements, such as intellectual property and the procuring of government services?
Well, we can describe them in a nutshell as rules that apply at the border, such as what we call tariffs or taxes on imports that make them more expensive, and some of the other rules that surround that, and rules that are behind the border, which is how government regulates various activities, whether that's the way that foreign investors have to operate or the kind of patents that we will recognise on medicine.
Could you please explain what inclusive trade means in the context of the recently signed FTA?
Some of your listeners might remember that a few years ago there was a really big national and international campaign on something called the TPPA, Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which was one of these big deals, but it was a mega deal that involved the US and a number of other countries. And so the backlash against that has led not only the Labor government here, but some similar governments in other countries to start using some kind of window dressing rhetoric of saying, oh, they're now going to promote inclusive trade. And so what we see is kind of clip-on chapters to these agreements that are on gender or on Māori or on development or on small business.
So what does it mean for many of these clauses to emphasise cooperation and exclude the use of the dispute resolution chapter?
It means that it's really discretionary in the hands of the UK and New Zealand governments. What they do, how much they do of it, what effect it will have. For example, what the budget might be or what they see as priorities. And indeed, in the Māori trade chapter, the UK has made it very clear that it's not actually, there's only three cooperation activities that are mentioned, and there's a footnote that makes it clear that they're not actually committing to do or resource any particular activity.
One aspect of the TPPA, which you mentioned previously, that was highly criticised within New Zealand, most notably by the Waitangi Tribunal, was the digital trade chapter. And I'm wondering if you could explain or make a comment on how the e-commerce components and digital trade aspects of the latest announced FTA differ from the TPPA or don't differ.
For Māori, there has been a really big concern that data, which is at the very core of all of the digital, is not just a kind of abstract piece of code, but it goes to the very essence of who you are. so whakapapa, a part of the being of Māori, and these trade rules allow the big tech companies in particular, because they're the main actors, to take data collected or mined within Aotearoa New Zealand, including Māori data, anywhere they want in the world, and basically do whatever they want with it according to the rules of where they've taken it. And so the Waitangi Tribunal said the failure in the TPPA, or its successor agreement, the CPTPP, sorry for all the acronyms, did not actively protect Māori in that space. And unfortunately, what we see in the UK agreement is those rules, especially around data, are the same.
With your criticisms there, I'm wondering how the inclusion of the Treaty of Waitangi within the agreement and the inclusion of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples as well help those issues or don't help those issues.
When we're looking at an agreement between the UK and New Zealand, you would expect the Treaty of Waitangi to be at the very core. That's the constitutional foundation stone of which Queen Victoria was part. But what we see instead is that the references to the Treaty of Waitangi have the United Kingdom saying it notes it was an original signatory, but it has no responsibilities now and it has passed them all over to the government of New Zealand.
So in your view, how could more equitable outcomes, in particular with regards to Indigenous issues, be achieved in FTAs in the future?
There is a dialogue that has been established since the Waitangi Tribunal claim on the TPPA, which is moving incrementally. So there have been some steps on the part of the government, but they are not big enough or serious enough steps. And Māori have consistently said that as a treaty partner, they need to be at the negotiating table. They need to have rights of access to information, not under secret squirrel confidentiality rules, but that can be talked about with Māori around the country. There needs to be protections in these agreements and not simply rights for commercial interests and protections that are effective.
So would you say that the changes you would like to see happening are occurring, but just at a much slower pace than is ideal?
There are some incremental steps, but that have not yet bitten the bullet of what a treaty relationship involves. So it is still, all the processes and decisions are still controlled by the Crown. And so, yes, there have been some incremental steps, but there needs to be a mind shift and a shift in terms of constitutional thinking before we can talk about treaty-based negotiations and agreements.
Correct my question here if I've interpreted you wrong, but it sounds like what you see as needing to happen is large-scale structural changes with regards to how international agreements by New Zealand are negotiated. How do you see that occurring within the context of our government structure and political structure?
The Waitangi Tribunal claim was a real shock to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade and to the government. They are still working out how to deal with it, and the problem is that they're not putting anything else on hold, such as these negotiations, until that's resolved. There is a process, and that process is the Māori-led process. I'm a Pākehā. I'm just a technical advisor on this. And it will intensify, especially if the Crown appears not to be moving fast enough.
That was Emeritus Professor Jane Kelsey from the University of Auckland discussing the equity impacts of the recently announced UK-NZ FTA. Thank you so much, Jane, for coming on today. Personally, I really enjoyed speaking to her and hearing her views, and I hope the listeners as well enjoyed that piece.
That That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.